Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Delighted to say we have a very, very special guest in the studio. Busy time of year for him, Mr. AP McCoy. AP, thanks for making the time. I know it's a bit manic at the moment and the build-up to Cheltenham. You're getting pulled here, there and everywhere. How have you been?
Good, good. Could be worse, Keith. Could be working for a living. Something that you and I will never know anything
exactly,
about.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So what have you been doing with yourself? Bit of punditry?
Bit of punditry. I do a bit of stuff on ITV Racing for the bigger days, working 4 days at Cheltenham. For those, I'm keeping busy. The golf is a little quiet at this time of the year. I'm probably more of a fair weather golfer.
Supposed to be playing today, I believe. But
supposed to be playing at the K Club today, but the weather, I was quite pleased about that because something I never did when I was riding, I ended up out in places in Dublin last night that I probably shouldn't have been. But you wouldn't have called it a very professional if I was still a jockey. But
you were out with a mutual friend of ours, but which will remain nameless. We won't stitch him up. But I was supposed to be there, but I was too busy preparing for
good
chatting with you this morning, so you still have an air of professionalism about me.
That's very professional, and you didn't miss a lot. We were very quiet.
Went
home quite early. Yeah,
quiet one.
Quite early in the morning.
Listen, you've been relatively enjoying the break, or is it still not quite sitting well?
Have I been enjoying the break? I was very lucky as a jockey because it's a very dangerous sport to be in. I was able to walk away on my terms. You know, was I ready for it? You know, had I had enough racing? Probably not really, but it was the right, you know, it was the right thing to do. I was nearly 41 when I retired, which was a good age for a jump jockey. I'd been lucky enough to be champion jockey for 20 years, and I don't think there would ever been a right time. I often look, it is a dangerous sport, and I've seen colleagues being fatally injured and suffer severe paralysis and different injuries that you know, that make me think how lucky I was to walk away. But at the same time, I used to think I wished I got frightened by it sometimes. I wished it.
Did it never frighten you?
Not really, you know. Not really. I knew the dangers of it. I knew there was two ambulances coming behind me. I knew I was going to end up in them at some point. But in some ways, I miss winning more than else. But in some ways, I miss that the danger. I miss the adrenaline of the danger. I miss the riding in a 20 odd runner race at Cheltenham Festival and maybe falling in the first three or four and, you know, 16 or 18 or 20 horses galloping over the top of you, and you actually get up off the ground thinking, God, I got away with that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's mad to. And then sometimes when you're on the ground and you don't get away with it, you think, well, do you know what? I ride between 700 and 1,000 horses every year. You ain't going to get away with it all the time. You're a bit unlucky.
Yeah.
But as I said, I'm well aware that some of my colleagues weren't lucky enough to get away with it, and there's days in the weigh room as a jockey that I'll never forget because of that, you know. And it is, you know, it can be life changing for you, your colleagues, and for your families as well. So, but it was a great way of life, a great sport.
Was that always the way you wanted to go, right from a small lad growing up in Antrim? Was it always purely horse racing?
Yeah, look, was it purely horse racing? My younger brother was All Ireland champion boxer, you know. I suppose that kind of came from, you know, I think as in the north, you grew up as you watched the likes of Alex Higgins, you played snooker, you boxed because of Barry McGuigan,
or
you know, you had, you know, icons. I remember going and getting a football signed when I was 8 in my local town, Marrowfield, by Pat Jennings, you know, because he was the Arsenal goalkeeper and they just come back from the World Cup, you know. You know, Liam Brady was someone that,
one of your heroes.
Yeah, you know, and someone I'm actually friendly with now, and have played golf, you know, so with quite a bit. So that's, you know, there's a lot of things. But was it always horses? And yeah, I think from about the age of 8 or 9, even though I'm not from a horse, my dad was a joiner, a builder, and you know, my mum, we had a shop at home. You know, we had 4 sisters, 1 brother. None of them have ever sat on a horse, but there's a picture of me and a horse when I was 2. You know, so I think it was kind of, it was meant
something
to be
there.
And I left home when I was 15, Keith. You know, I kind of left school a lot earlier than I should have done. I used to, you know, I pretty much didn't go to school my last year. In my 5th year of secondary school, I decided end of September, I went for about the month of September, and then decided I didn't need to go anymore. But I used to cycle 15 miles every morning to the late Billy Rock's yard to ride a horse, and I used to cycle 15 miles back from the age of 13. Mm-hmm. You know,
so that was, it was from then it was serious then,
yeah,
wasn't it?
It was serious,
proper.
And I knew, Like, I left home when I was 15, and obviously I left home thinking that if I'm any good at this, I won't ever live back at home. And I didn't want people to think that, oh, he's back home, he went for 6 months.
Didn't want to be a failure coming back.
I didn't want to
I left the exact same age as you, 15, and similar ages in terms of going over to England. And that would have been one of the biggest things that I didn't want, because I would see footballers go over
and come back.
And the one thing that grated on me at the time was they used to have these parties and going away parties for what? You haven't gone anywhere yet.
Yeah,
and that would have been the biggest, the fear of failure in terms of giving up, not quite making it. That, not embarrassment, I suppose, but just not wanting to come back with your tail between your legs.
Yeah, pretty much. I was like that, and you know, you do make those sacrifices. My younger sister was barely even 5, so I didn't really get to see her growing up. But I didn't want to come back with my tail between my legs. I didn't want to be a failure, you know. But I was quite an ambitious person, and I was going to try and give it my best. And if it didn't work, like, there was nights when I left home when I was 15, I cried with homesickness, and I thought, I do want to go home. I was in my room, and you think, God, I'm not sure I'm strong enough for that, but I'm such a stubborn person. I thought, you know what, I'm going to stick with it, and I really, really wanted to be a jockey, you know. And that was, you know, you kind of want to be, you want to be successful as well. You want to set yourself goals. And my career didn't really start, I wasn't an overnight success by any means. I worked in Jim Bulger's for 4.5 years, and you know, I thought I was capable and all that, but I only rode 9 winners in the 4.5 years that I was there, you know, which is not, you know, it would be enough to make someone give up. And I didn't, at that time when I was leaving Jim's, I kind of didn't particularly like my time there, but I know that it made me. I know that he was...
So it was good grounding.
Great grounding. And I was glad that I stuck it out for those 4.5 years, because when I did get the opportunity, I had the grounding to cope with. I had, you know, I had the experience of, you know, I wasn't someone that was just walking in and being a success after 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, it made me appreciate it even more. It made me work harder for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was getting this opportunity, and I was getting it a little bit later, you know. So, but I think in life, I've been very lucky that I've worked for very successful people, and I've liked the people that I've worked for as well. You know,
that's been important to you, hasn't it, all the way through?
That's a big thing.
You mentioned Jim Bulger, obviously, yeah. Martin Pipe,
yeah,
all, JP after that.
Yeah, all high achievers, you know, with high expectations, you know. They expect the best from you. They expect the best from themselves, and they expect the best from you.
Yeah.
You know, you're not just going to be tagging along behind them. You have to go with it and work with it. And if you've got ambition, they will make you better.
Yeah. Well, we were just chatting off here, and we'll get on to a bit of football chat later. But we mentioned about you maybe not being a team. You would have struggled in a team environment, and certainly in certain teams these days. Like,
definitely in my team, Arsenal, at the moment, I definitely struggle. But
with that, that's interesting to see that the people that you worked with, in terms of JP, you know, they have to have the same ambition.
Oh yeah.
In terms of where you wanted to go to, because you were so driven. You've already said you're so stubborn in terms of the way you want to go about it.
You know, I often say that those people who are ambitious, like, they're never really satisfied. Their ambition is never satisfied. They always want a little bit more. They're looking for that perfection that is never going to be there. You know, and that's what those people that I worked for. Are like that, you know. And,
so
and
when then, were you like that from then?
I suppose, you know, I often think now, for people who went to Jim Bulger's, if you had ambition to learn, you would learn, because things were done correctly.
Right.
You know, he told you how, you know, that how he wanted things done, and you either listened or he kept telling you, and the quicker you listened, the less you needed to be told.
Yeah.
Did
you always agree with it at the time?
Not really, no. No, you know, I was, you know, I definitely didn't agree with it. He was like a bit of a schoolmaster, and, you know. But I do look back now, and he has ingrained things in me that I know were so correct in the way. If I was doing it now, I'd want it done as well. And it was the same with Martin Piper or with JP. You know, they set standards, and they have expectations, and, you know, they're very ambitious, you know, and they want to be better and quicker and faster than everyone else, you know. They want to try and get that edge that makes them different than the others.
How do Martin and JP differ?
How do they differ? You know, Martin Pipe, for those that don't know, was the most successful jump trainer of racehorses there ever was. His dad was a bootmaker, never had any dealings with racehorses at all, went racing one day with his dad, wanted to back a horse and decided that none of them looked fit enough. Came back and told his dad that he was going to train a racehorse because that was what he was going to do. And his dad says, you know nothing about racehorses. And he decided that he was going to be a racehorse trainer to prove a point to his dad. And he read up books about athletes, whether it be Zebatek or whoever it was who was the Olympic athlete who won at different distances, and how he intervally trained himself, and it was to prove a point to his dad, who was a very successful man, because his dad told him he couldn't do it. Obviously
stubbornness again.
Obviously he got the enjoyment from being successful and wanted to be more successful, but the more you want, the more the need becomes a greed, and you want everything, and that. I often hear about, everyone's different, but I see young people get asked in questions now about what is your goals. I don't really have any goals, I just want to enjoy it and all that. You should always have goals, because the goals keep moving, they never, you get them and then, you can never, if you don't have goals, you can never score, you need to have that goal, you need to have that target, and you need to be never satisfied with that target.
Considering you were champion jockey 20 times, I read this recently about you where you never particularly enjoyed it. You've said you got to the last, you tried to win it as soon as you could because you enjoyed those few weeks, because then that last race, it's back to square one. And I suppose it's a good trait because it kept you going.
Yeah.
But was there any more room that you, or would you change that? And I suppose the best players would go with time again. We see, for instance, with Chelsea, Man City, they can't replicate it the next season because maybe players, managers are resting on their laurels a little bit. That certainly wasn't the case with you.
Yeah, I often say that I've said numerous times that I don't know if I was ever content. And I've said, using the analogy, that I didn't really enjoy it, but I must have enjoyed it because it's what drove me. Mm. And what I did enjoy was that little fraction of time where I won and I beat everyone else. But when I went out in the next race, it was gone. Mm. And I was looking for that repetitive drug every time I went out, and I couldn't get it every time I went out. And that's where it was difficult to satisfy. But was I content? I don't think I was ever satisfied, but I did enjoy it. I think for those 20 years, when I used to try, the Jockeys Championship was all year round. It's numerical. And the only real enjoyment or relief that I got was the time when it was numerically possible, but no one else could beat me. So if I was 50 winners ahead with, or 40 winners ahead with a month to go or 3 weeks to go, there wasn't enough races really for someone to beat me.
Yeah.
And I could enjoy it for that month. But the day that I held up the Jockeys Championship trophy in Sandown at the end of the season,
that was it.
It was gone. It was gone. The day, as soon as I picked up the trophy. In fact, the day I went to the races, I went with this feeling inside me that, you know what, I'm actually not champion jockey any longer, because tomorrow it's back to none.
What was it? You just didn't want to give that up. You didn't want anyone else in it to get ahead.
I didn't want to give that up, and you know what? I liked the enjoyment of beating everyone.
Did you?
And a lot of sports people will never admit to it, and it's one of the things you miss now. You miss. The ego of beating everyone, you miss the adulation of beating everyone, you miss, going to the Cheltenham Festival and winning the Gold Cup in front of 70,000 people, and people thinking, you know what, he's all right at what he does, but my biggest problem throughout my career was not so much keeping the people I worked with or the people I worked for happy, was keeping me happy. You have to have standards and you have to have goals, and can you, as a sports person, can you ever be satisfied? Yeah, you can be satisfied for a period of time, but I don't think that I was ever really, really satisfied. I'm lucky that I'm retired now, that I don't have any regrets. I know I didn't take any shortcuts. I know I went racing days when I was in total agony from like injuries, and I'd keep going, and so I know I didn't take any shortcuts. Yeah, if I was doing it again, I'd be much better. As I've said it a few times, most of my colleagues said when I retired, people said, oh, he's the winning most jockey of all time. He's ridden 4,357 winners, and one of them piped up and said, yeah, but no one's mentioned the 14,000 losers that he's ridden. I've got reminded quite quickly that I was the losing most jockey of all time. But do I have regrets? No. And I'm not sure. I know there's a few different footballers that I'd play with, but I listened to Jermaine Jenas on the TV last week, and he said about, you know, he regrets that he didn't feel like he didn't fulfil his potential, you know, and a few of his ex-teammates had a little bit of a go saying, sorry, we didn't try a bit harder, you know, but I think he was having a go at himself rather than them, you know. Maybe
it wasn't taken like that by that, but
look, I was looking at him and I thought, fair play to you, you know. You know, if he thought he should have done better, it's a good thing to have.
Yeah,
you know, why shouldn't you think you should? Yeah. I think I should have done better.
Talk to me about the sacrifice, and you made one going to England at 15.
Yeah.
I always say about more so with footballers, I would say it's because of the life that you can have, it's not so much sacrifice for me, it's choices. But yeah, I think one big sacrifice that you certainly made, and I've seen it firsthand, was your diet. I don't think I could have done that. I really don't.
Yeah, like, I'm 5'10" and like not something I'm proud of. Now, the day I retired, I was 10 stone 2. I weighed myself during Royal Ascot this year and I was 12'8". I'm a little bit better shape now than I was. I think I got through that stage in my life where I just let it go a little too much.
I think you're entitled to that.
But I've a little bit more discipline now. But there would be days, you know, you'd eat once a day. Certainly going to the Cheltenham Festival and I had plenty of rides, I wouldn't have been eating. I wouldn't have had breakfast or anything like that. I never had breakfast. Obviously, I didn't have lunch because I was riding. And then I'd probably eat a little bit after racing, you know. So there was days that you didn't eat a lot. There was sacrifices. You travel a lot. But the reality of it is, it didn't work. You know, I never done a day's work in my life. I genuinely mean that. Yeah, I was travelling up and down the length and breadth of England every day from the end of October until Christmas Eve. And then, you know, from you'd have Christmas Day and Stephen's Day off, and then you'd be back till the end of May if you didn't get injured.
So do you really feel that it wasn't work? It was never work.
People, there's lads out there working on building sites that are working, you know, that are getting in a van and going off to work. That's work. And I'm not having a go at your profession, whatever. But
I agree with what you got to say.
But I read that, you know, that, you know, I listen to TV or a radio station and said, oh, but you know, he said 3 games this week, and you know, he knew. I said, 3 games? You know what I mean? He's doing something that any kid on the kid in the street would give their left hand for. It's not work.
Yeah,
it's not the real world. And if they think, if any sports person thinks it's the real world, it ain't. You know, and the sooner people realise that, and the sooner they appreciate the fact that, you know what, I'm in a very privileged position. I get to entertain people. I get to live my life because they're paying to come and watch me. You know, and the more sports people need to, I think, me personally, I think the more sports people need to appreciate the people that
you do get cocooned in a bubble, don't you?
I don't know how much it is with horse eyes,
but certainly in a football environment, you have no idea. And that,
yeah,
I've retired similar time to you around three years ago. Football now has gone on to another level.
Yeah.
They can't really relate.
No, they can't.
Man on the street.
No, they can't. And look, the TV and television rights have obviously had a huge impact on that. But I agree with you, they can't relate to it. But at the same time, you know, I do think that they. Look, I was the worst because I went to the Cheltenham Festival. I went into the weigh room 2 hours before racing. And I was so selfish, so self centred. I wouldn't have known if the Pope was out watching side. I wouldn't have noticed, you know. And that's because you become engrossed, you become ingrained in what, in you, and in sport, I think you have to. But there comes a time, I think, when you have to give that little moment. Look, I appreciate that, you know, that with the social medias of the world out now, that people, they can't really have a life. They can't really have
to be a bit cautious.
They have to be a little bit cautious. But this is a very short period of time in their life, and there'll come a time when they'll be like you and me, when no one will care what they're doing, and they'll just be another person that played football or rode horses, that someone else will be in the position playing for Manchester City or playing for Arsenal or Liverpool or Manchester United, you know, or Chelsea. They'll be taking the position. People want to, the young lads of today will want to talk about him, you know. You know, you look at the sporting icons of people that played football for Ireland, the Paul McGraths of this world or whatever, you know, or the great hurlers, the great footballers, you know, someone else will come along, will take that place.
Yeah. You speak about when you're not in that limelight directly. When did you start thinking about retirement? Did you think about it in the build-up 2-3 years, a year before? I remember being in your house on Valentine's night, 2015, was about a couple of months before you announced your retirement, and you were kind of alluding to it that night. You were recording... being AP at the time.
That's right.
And you were touching on it, but if I think about it myself,
yeah,
I was preparing for retirement for years. So, yeah, in terms of, and maybe that made me take my eye off football, yeah, a little bit, maybe, I think, yeah, and been not as driven. But I was always wary of that day I retire, I need something to do.
Mm-hmm. The thing about when I think about retiring, when I'd won 15 jockeys championships, I was nearly 36, and I set myself this goal to win 5 more jockeys championships. Now, there was a lot of reasons, you know, a friend of mine who was a football agent, he was the one that talked me into doing the documentary Being AP, and, you know, he kind of sold it to me that, you know, that, look, my little boy Archie was barely even one, he said, he's not going to remember you riding, and sure, you can sew him a tip if you win the Grand National and that, but it ain't going to be the same, you know. This would be a good thing for him to look at in years to come when he can realise that you were a jockey and what you were lucky enough to achieve. I thought about it, and then I thought about it, you know what, and this friend of mine who taught me this had no idea I was retiring, you know, he just said, look, it'd be a nice thing to have in years, mm-hmm, to come. And I thought about it, and I thought, you know what, if I do this and it's my last year riding, and I get to a point where I won't be able to turn back, it will come out of my mouth one day that I am retiring, and I won't be able to change my mind. And it kind of, that was one of the reasons I did that. But when did I decide? 5 years earlier, at the beginning of my last season, I won the champion hurdle on jet ski in Punchestown for Jesse Harrington, and I went back down to the McManuses that night, and I was having dinner with JP and Noreen, and I think John, their son, was there. And I said to JP during dinner, I said, look, JP, I've got something to tell you. I said, I think, and I haven't told anyone this, my wife and Owen, I said, but I think this is going to be my last year riding. You know, if I'm lucky enough to win the Jockey Championship, it'll be my 20th year. And, you know, it's just the way I've thought about it. I had this goal, this was my target. I didn't want to be a sports person that someone said he's not as good as he once was. And I was that kind of person that I never cared what he was. I was actually making sure that I wasn't saying to myself, you're not as good as you once were.
Mm.
You know, I didn't want that to happen. I used the excuse that I didn't want people to think he's not as good as he was, but I didn't want myself to ever think that I wasn't as good. I didn't want to get to a point halfway through the season and think, you're gone. You know, you haven't got it anymore.
So it was important for you to go out on a high.
So it was important to go out. So I told him, and he said, look, you've got to think about these things. And at the beginning of that year, I rode my fastest 50th winner ever in a season. I rode my fastest 100th winner in a season. I came home that night, and I said to my wife, and she heard it in the Sky Sports newsroom that I'd ridden my 100th winner, fastest 100th winner. And she goes, oh, that's amazing. I said, you know, Chanel, I said, I actually think I'm getting better.
Did you say that to her?
Yeah. I said, I think this is the first time in my life that I actually think I know what I'm doing. And she looked at me and think, you psycho. and she actually genuinely looked at me thinking, you're a psycho. But I genuinely, because statistically I felt like I had.
Yeah.
You know, I'd spent 20 years.
But you thought after 19 years I've been champion jockey, this, now I've got it right.
Yeah, now I've got it right. And then, you know, and I had this thing in my head that I'd go and ride, you know, I'd never ridden 300 winners in a season. I'd ridden 307 winners in 2002 from January to January, you know, which was probably my greatest achievement. But I hadn't ridden 300 winners in a season, and I thought this was going to be, I was going to ride my 300th winner, and I was going to announced I was retiring after I'd done it, and it would be a great way to retire. And I rode my fastest 150th winner, and then I broke my collarbone and broke a few ribs and punctured my lung one evening in Worcester on a Thursday evening. And I went back riding on the Monday, you know, 4 or 5 days after doing it, because I felt like I couldn't have any days off. I felt like if I was going to ride 300 winners, it's only 65 days in a year, you can't have a winner, and I couldn't afford to miss a day. And anyway, I did ride 3 winners, and I came back 5 days after, and then I got a fall the next day, and my collarbone, my whole shot, as you'd expect, someone with a broken collarbone. No one knew that my body was in as bad a way as it was, and to be honest, I lost it mentally.
Did you?
Yeah, I lost it mentally. It was the first time in my life that I went home and thought, because I knew I was retiring at the end of the year, I wasn't going to get what I was wanting. I was on course to ride 300 winners. I went riding, like, who in the right mind would go riding 4 days after breaking your collarbone and puncturing your lung? And you know, I didn't even let, my doctor didn't even know what happened to me, you know. I went on the quiet somewhere to get a doctor.
Did you quite often hide things that you had wrong?
Yeah. And this was the last race in Worcester, and I'm on a Thursday evening at 8 o'clock. I wouldn't get into the ambulance. I wouldn't let them bring me to the hospital. I made, you know, I had a row with my GP, who was my doctor at the time. I told him, if I'm going, you're bringing me in your car. No one's going to see me going into the hospital. And went back riding, you know, 5 days later. And then when I got the fall, my collarbone was like a football. I lost it mentally. It was like everything had ever. It was like everything had been taken away.
Yeah.
It was like, you know. It was like, so. I'd say it was the only time in my life, because I knew I wasn't getting another chance. You know, and I remember going on holidays for a week and coming back thinking it's finished.
Yeah.
You know, I was still going to be champion jockey because I was, you know, that was in October. You know, that was in October, and I was like 70 minutes ahead of everyone else. I could nearly have not ridden again.
Yeah.
And but it was just mentally, I was finished.
Were injuries one of the hardest parts of it throughout? Because you've had a few naughty ones, haven't you?
Yeah, like I broke my ankle, I broke my leg, broke my arm, my wrist, broke my back, I fractured a few vertebrae a few times.
You're saying these broke as all if my they're ribs. Not particularly
yeah,
big injuries.
Broke all my ribs, fractured my sternum, punctured my lung, loads, collarbones, cheekbones, all my teeth, you know, so. But like, it's part of the job, and if you're going to be a jump jockey, you have to. The lads that can't, you know, accept the dangers of it, you know, that's where they struggle a bit, and they only last a period of time. The sooner you get it into your thick skull, with obviously the thicker you are, the better you are. But the thing is, the sooner you get that into your head that you're going to get injured, the better, because the reality strikes home quicker, and you think, you know what, I'm supposed to get injured. I can't go around. You know, I said it to Ruby Walsh a few weeks ago. You know. Or a few months ago, when he got injured, he broke his leg in November, and he was in bad off form. You know, he was getting a little older, and he was worried about it. I said, like, why are you worried about it? I said, like, you know as well as I do. I said, you haven't had a break for a year and a half or 2 years. I said, you're riding
territory.
I said, like, just because you're a little bit older doesn't mean to say you're going to. Because then he kind of thought about it. And he went, do you know what? You're right. I said, it's no different.
How does that affect? Because you've been touch and go for a couple of Cheltenham festivals of pretend. You've mentioned Ruby in November, broke his leg. How does that affect your build up to the festival? Is it as important? So, for instance, if I hadn't been playing for 3 months and then go and play a game, you'd be nowhere near it. How does it affect you as a jockey?
Yeah, it's not as much. You know, not as much. You know, the fitness levels, obviously you need to be pretty fit, but. And there's no, it's like playing a football match. I say there's nothing like playing a football match to replicate it. You know, I know that he's been in Santry for the last sort of 2 months, you know, working, maybe even longer since he broke his leg. He's been in Santry every day. You know, he's a very dedicated lad. Look, he'll go back to Cheltenham. He's one of those lads that, you know, obviously he's, to be as good as he has, he's worked very hard at it. But he has worked, and he's the hardest worker of all, but he's very natural. You know, he's lucky. Like, he's like a Messi, you know what I mean? It's like, it just comes easy to him, and I don't think
he's back in the saddle today.
He could probably have got back a week or 10 days ago, and I'd chatted to him about it and said, look, what's the point? You know, you give yourself as long as you can,
yeah.
And God forbid if you got another injury, you know, he's riding, you know, in Thurles today. You think, if God, if you got an injury, will he give it all the time he could? He done everything the right way. If it doesn't work out, well, it wasn't from taking the chances you shouldn't have taken, but. Look, he's ridden more winners at Cheltenham Festival than anyone else. He's the best jockey that I've seen. So, I'd rather have him on my horse than have him riding against me.
Are you looking forward to Cheltenham next week, or do you dread it a little bit now?
Do you know what? I don't look forward. Look, I love horse racing. I love sport. I love elite sport. You know, but I don't go to Cheltenham the way I used to. I don't think about it. I don't get obsessed with it. I don't get engrossed in it as much as I.
Do you get any buzz about being back there?
Not really.
No, do you not?
No, I love the enjoyment of it, and I love watching good horses and good jockeys win. But I'm not past the stage yet where I think I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Which is not
helping. That must be
hard. Which is not helping me. I don't look and I think, yeah, sure, the likes of Ruby and them lads are brilliant, but I don't look at it and think, do you know what, it was a good job you retired, because you definitely couldn't compete anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm just not there yet. Look, I love watching the Champion Hurling and the Gold Cup and all those big races, and I will, but I don't go into it with the same intensity, the same obsession that I had before. I don't walk in there a couple of hours before racing, go into the weigh room, put my racing post down, and the only time I'd be seen during Cheltenham was when I come out to ride in 6 races every day, and I wouldn't look left or right at what I was doing, and I'd go back in again. Now I'm out doing different things for different, you know, I'm an ambassador for William Hill and Albert Bartlett. Johnny Bartlett used to sponsor me, I do stuff for him, and obviously working for ITV, so a lot of things I'm seeing, a lot of things in Cheltenham that I never saw before.
Seen, yeah.
It was like when I went to work as a pundit the first day in ITV or the first day, you know, when I went to work as a pundit, I went to Cheltenham. I didn't know where the toilet was because I'm not allowed in the weigh room. You know, I'm thinking, like, you know, I've been coming here since 1995. Yeah. 1994 was the first time in Cheltenham. October 94 was the first time in Cheltenham. I didn't know where the toilet was outside, you know. And then all of a sudden you're in the toilet beside, just, I don't mean, I'm not meaning this in an arrogant way, but regular punters are asked about racing. I'm thinking, oh God, I was never like this before. I was having to talk to people about what I was doing.
Dose of reality,
you know. Dose of reality, you know. Where do you get a cup of tea?
Yeah. What horse are you most looking forward to seeing next week?
Look, I'd like to see, I think Bouvier will hopefully win the champion hurdle for JP and Noreen. You know, that would be, you know, they're great supporters of the game. I'd love to see him win. He'd be, the Gold Cup is such an open race. I think Altior will win the champion chase, and that, look, the rest of them are pretty open races. But if I was picking one horse out, you know, I'd like to see Bouvier win the champion hurdle. I'd like to see, there's a lad, Nick Gifford, trains a horse at JP's called Did They Leave You Out Too. I'd like to see him win too, because I know that, you know, look, JP is a, you know, JP and Noreen are great supporters of the game and great supporters of, you know, they have horses with Willie Mullins and the Gordon Elliott, say for, but they have horses with a lot of other smaller trainers, and they have horses with Nick Gifford in England, and I think JP personally and would get as much satisfaction out of that horse winning as he would any of the others. I'm not saying he will win, because the bumper's a very open race and win, but I reckon if he won, other than winning the champion hurdle, get as much satisfaction, you know, because he, you know, that's the sort of man he is. So I'd like to see Did They Leave You Out Too in the bumper.
I want to move on to a bit of football chat. I know you're a massive Arsenal fan.
It's torture.
Now, I'm not an Arsenal fan. Excuse me.
It's torture.
And they do my head in. So as driven as you are, knowing you the way I do and how stubborn you are, certainly one thing you've got in common with Arsene Wenger.
I became an Arsenal fan. I was five when Arsenal won the 1979 FA Cup. I had a lot of friends who were, I had two cousins who were Man United fans who were older than me.
So you went the other way?
Yes, and my dad then had told me about the Arsenal team that had Pat Jennings and Liam Brady and Frank Stapleton, and then, you know, there was a good crew of Irish people in that team. And I went the other way because Arsenal won, you know. And I became an Arsenal fan then because of Pat Jennings and Liam Brady and that. And I looked through the periods of times of the team. Look, in the last, at the beginning of Arsene Wenger's reign, Arsenal were very lucky that, you know, we had a back four that was probably the best back four in English football, and that developed. And then you get to the point where the Invincibles in 2003, 2004, you know, they were a big, physical, well organised team, you know, that had obviously Tony Adams had just retired, but there was a lot of that structure still there. You know, we had Saul Campbell, you know, Martin Keown, Ashley Cole, Lauren
Seaman still behind that,
you know. And then you had, you know, our midfield, whether it was Gilberto or Edu, but it was, you know, Vieira, obviously Perez, Bergkamp, Henry, Lundberg, you know, with the exception of Lundberg, all those, and the exception of Lundberg and Ashley Cole, they were all big lumps. You know, I remember Danny Murphy telling me that the first time he went to Highbury, you know, he looked back and he said to Steve Jarvis, look at the size of these lads, you know. And that
wind that on 5-6 years, you know, they were like he went Barcelona types, didn't he, in terms of his recruitment. I find it quite sad when I see him on the touchline now. I see him getting grilled in press conferences, because I'm with you in terms of he transformed
English
Arsenal
football.
English football, he was on a pedestal for coaches, managers aspiring to play the way Arsenal were playing. But he didn't evolve in the way Sir Alex evolved. Getting coaches in, trusting them, trusting people to do jobs underneath him, and him just managing
and let them make the decisions. I agree. And look, it's happened, you know. Look, people would say, look, he's won three of the last five FA Cups or whatever it is. You think that's relatively, you know, if you were Liverpool or Tottenham, you'd say, God, that's great success, isn't it? But Arsenal is not Liverpool or Tottenham. You know, Arsenal should be competing with Manchester United, and obviously Liverpool haven't won a Premier League title for quite a long time. But do I look at them and I think, you know, at the moment, I think the great thing about football is, I remember George Graham when he took over Arsenal, and they asked him, what is he thinking? He goes, I'll tell you what I'm thinking, I'm taking over a bunch of so and so's that got the last fella sacked, you know what I mean? And that's what's going to happen. And whatever happens when Arsenal, that time does, when Arsene Wenger does go, I hope the next man comes in and thins them out pretty quick, you know, because I'm not sure that a lot of them, there's some of them, look, it's easy for us to sit here and slag footballers there, but I don't know that some of them are just quite good enough to be playing for Arsenal. Mm. And some of them have made little, and he's the one that carries the can. You know, you look at the mistake that, you know, professionalism is about an elimination of mistakes, that's what it is. And if you look at the mistakes, you know, that Mustafi made against, I'd be disappointed. I'm a terrible footballer, but I'd be disappointed if I let, you know, a little lad that's 5 foot five nudge me off the ball. You know, can you imagine Martin Keown or Tony Adams? Or
wouldn't,
you know,
happen, would it?
Wouldn't happen. He'd be, you know, he'd know he was behind him for a start. You know, so
those they keep happening though. So there's a reason why they keep happening, and the personnel that you recruit. So it is a bit of a vicious circle.
And as Martin Pipe said to me once, and whoever it was said it before him, you know, the definition of stupidity is someone that does the same thing over and over again and expects a different result. Yeah. You know, so things have to change. You know, I love Arsene Wenger and all, but you know, there comes a time when you think, you know what, and I think he deserves, you know, he deserves to enjoy his last period of time as a football manager, and the way it's going at the moment, as an Arsenal football manager, the way it's going at the moment, that's not happening.
Mm.
You know, so if they said, by the way,
can he go upstairs, do you think?
I don't see why not, you know, but I think if they decide now, they said, by the way, they come out in 6 weeks time and say Arsene Wenger is going to be stepping down at the end of the season, and let the fans give him the respect that he deserves. But the way it's going at the moment, they're losing respect, you know, and they're losing respect because they're not winning. And whether the sad reality of it is, that is what sport is all about. And the buck stops, you know, it's like, if you're sailing the ship, there's only one fella that's going to sink it, and he's carrying the can. So
I just want to tell a little story about when you came in. You very kindly came into MK Dons when I was coaching there. We were trying to get promotion at the time from League One, and I've always said that there's very talented footballers at League One, at Championship level. Talent wise, some of them are the same as Premier League players, but the difference is what goes on between the head. And there was a player who I'll remain nameless was working with at the time, and I was trying to curl him, trying to coach him, trying to nurture him, because I'd been through it, I'd gone off the boil in my playing career, so I was trying to impart that knowledge that I had onto him, and spent so much time trying to get him through that stage. You couldn't believe it. You couldn't believe that somebody with a talent, which he was very, very talented, wasn't willing to apply himself. You found that very, very hard to believe, didn't you?
Well, you know, that's probably, how long ago, 6 years ago, is it? Whatever long ago.
Three years.
It's only 3 years ago. 3 years ago. But, you know, that same person, like, I didn't even know where he is now.
Mm.
You know, and I'm looking at him thinking, does he realise the regrets he's going to have? But then you said he might not even realise that yet.
No, I don't think
so. You know, and that's the unfortunate part. But he was in a very privileged position where he could have made something. I most certainly wasn't the most talented jockey. You know, I never for 1 minute. The only time that I ever thought I was the best jockey, and I don't mind saying it now when I'm retired, was when I was on a horse. I actually genuinely felt, I convinced myself, whether I was or wasn't, I genuinely convinced myself I was the best when I was on a horse. Now, when I got off it, I was so insecure. I lived in fear. I looked and thought, God, I could be so much better. I'm not as good as, you know. Suddenly, I never had doubts when I was on a horse. And I feel like if I went on a football field, I'd never have doubts. When I got off it.
But even after 5, 10 you would still feel like that?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. I'd feel that, you know what, someone's going to beat me. And then I'd ride more winners. Like, I broke Sir Gordon Richard's record in 2002. I'd been champion jockey 7 or 8 times, whatever it was, 6 or 7 times. And I kind of felt that, you know what, if I can ride this many winners, someone else can. You know what I mean? So I was always like, oh, if I can do it. And that's when I, just to go back what I said, when I rode my fastest 100 winner my last year riding, I didn't know where I got enjoyment from it or whether it annoyed me, the fact that I was 40 and that I'd actually done something that I couldn't do for 20 years.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I'm a 40-year-old and I can do it. Some little pup is definitely going to. And that really worried me. But you go back to the lad that you said that you were coaching. There will come a period in his life or a time in his life where he will have regrets. You know, I certainly didn't think I was the most talented. I genuinely thought I was the best worker. Now, another lads would think there's good work as well, but I definitely worked my best.
I'll tell you what I use quite often to. So I've coached the Irish underage teams the last couple of years, and they obviously see Ronaldo, Messi, you know, that usual debate, who's the better player, blah, blah, blah. I say to them, what do you think of Wayne Rooney? He's crap. I said, okay, go back 15 years, 12, 15, whatever years ago. Rooney and Ronaldo were fairly similar in terms of their stature at Man United at the time. One player devoted his life to being a footballer and being the absolute best he can be.
Yeah.
And he's ended up smashing all kinds of records. Wayne Rooney still had a very, very good career.
Yeah.
But I think he will have regrets.
Yeah, possibly. You know, Rooney was a very naturally talented lad. And I still look at him now, and I think Rooney was a brilliant footballer, because I watched him play, and you watch him even now, he can play balls into areas without even looking, because he knows that's he's got a lot of natural talent. You look at the physique of Ronaldo and you think, yeah, maybe he might be a bit vain and whatever, but you don't get in that position looking like that without being a, you know, being a professional in every way. You know, his
24/7.
his diet, his fitness, his regime is obviously dedicated to being the best footballer in the world, and that's not a coincidence. You know, and you look at how many footballers, and yeah, sure, whatever, it may be a little vain or whatever it is, and you know, he may love himself, but how many footballers would pull their shirt off and think, you know, and whether you like it or not, sport is all about, like, life is all about opinions. Everyone's got them. Everyone's got them. But statistics don't lie, you know, and statistics will tell you that, you know, that Ronaldo and Messi, you know, are, have broke all the stats, and it's, they're out of time.
Who's your favourite?
I'll tell you who I think my favourite footballer of all time was. I'd love to say George Best. I met him a few times, and he was a little bit of a legend, or Liam Brady. I honestly think that what Diego Maradona did to win a World Cup with Argentina, pretty much on his own,
passes it.
Was, and it's not because Messi hasn't won the World Cup, but what he did at Napoli to win Serie A, when Serie A was probably the best league in the world, it was probably a better league than La Liga is now, or the Premier League. You know, he won at Serie A with Napoli when they'd never won, they never looked like winning a game of football beforehand. They're a little bit better recently, but they haven't won a Serie A since. He won Serie A on his own as a footballer, and I don't care what anyone says, that, you know, not just because he did it on an international stage, but he did it
domestically as well.
Did it domestically. And look, people would, you know, you speak about Ronaldo, Diego Maradona was looked at everything that a professional footballer, you know, he shouldn't. But in terms of an achievement, you know, I think, and you can talk about Pele, who played in the great teams, or George Best, but he genuinely, I think, won two championships. He won a World Cup in a team that he carried, and he won a domestic title with a team that was in the best league in the world at the time on his own, and he proved it, because they've never won before or since. You know, you look at the Manchester United, or the Real Madrid, or the Barcelona's, they've all
gifted individuals, or
teams.
So you got
who's my favourite, Ronaldo or Messi?
You evaded that one quite nicely,
actually. I did. Who's my favourite? Who would you? I wouldn't have a clue. It's not
split.
It's not fair, you know.
Yeah.
Messi can do things with a ball that, you know, you see him dribbling around. Like Ronaldo scores great headers, and he, you know, and so, but Messi can dribble from one end of the football pitch to the other and still score. If you got a selection of their 10 best goals, Messi's best 10 goals would be better than Ronaldo's best 10 goals.
No. I'm taking Messi, then it's the answer.
Yeah, I think so. I think just Messi.
Listen, I don't want to take up any more of your time. I know you're a busy man. I really, really appreciate you coming in.
I know everything about football and horse racing now, don't I? People are going to listen to me and thinking, God, hell, what an opinionated so and so he is.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Really, really appreciate you coming in. And I hope you do enjoy some parts of next week at Cheltenham.
Oh, yeah, I will. I'll enjoy it more than people think.
Hey, P, thanks very much.
Cheers, thanks.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.